Welcome to Quick Bites by Mind Over Food. I'm Andy Friedman, and today we're going to talk with Laura Carfang, the founder and executive director of SurvivingBreastCancer.org. Hi, everyone. It's Andy from Mind Over Food, and I am so excited because today we're going to talk to Laura Carfang, who happens to be the founder and executive director at SurvivingBreastCancer.org, and she is herself a breast cancer survivor. She has a doctorate in education and is passionate about empowering others through knowledge. Laura's expertise is highly prized, and she has had the opportunity to present her research and philosophy in many different ways. She has presented her work in academic settings, such as the National Student Affairs Administrators in Higher Education Conference. And she has been the guest on several podcasts, including the DJ Breast Cancer podcast. And she even hosts one of her own extremely popular podcasts called the Breast Cancer Conversations. Most recently, she consulted with the segment producer of the Today Show regarding the impact COVID-19 is having within the breast cancer community, specifically related to delayed and disrupted treatment still going on today. Welcome to the show, Laura. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Andy, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate being here.
Oh, this is so exciting. And what a really important topic. And I'm so glad that you can share that with us today. So first of all, tell us what inspired you to start this website and create this community.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I'm so excited to share a little bit about my story, my experience with your listeners and your community, because one of the things that I'm realizing is that everybody everywhere knows somebody who's been diagnosed with cancer. Yeah, there's a lot of information out there about breast cancer. So to paint the landscape, here are just some statistics that I think would be helpful for the audience to know. Besides skin cancer, breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer among women in the U.S. In 2020, it's estimated that about 30% of newly diagnosed cancers in women will be breast cancers. You know, I think a little bit about, you know, October, and we're all aware of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and there's all these pink ribbons. And prior to my own diagnosis, it was just, yes, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Every month seems to have an awareness of something. There's a ribbon, there's a color, there's a walk, a march. But I wasn't really aware of what that awareness means. Like, yes, I'm aware of it, but what does that mean in terms of my own health, my own self-exams, my own priorities, and really digging in a little bit deeper into what breast cancer is. So first off, thank you so much for having me on your show and being able to share this with your community. And I was diagnosed, a little bit about my background, I was diagnosed at the age of 34. So one of the things that I want to share with everybody, a part of my story, is in the US, most mammograms don't take place until the age of 40. And so right away, I was thrown into this world of a new lexicon, new information. I became, overnight, you had to become an expert in breast cancer. Yeah. New terminologies, new treatment plans, chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, you name it. And I was realizing that as, quote unquote, like a younger woman, I'm, you know, considered under 40 in this population.
It's very young. Yeah.
To be dealing with a cancer diagnosis. And while you can Google, and you know, we're both from Boston and we can just Google, we have some of that access to the best medical centers in the world, which is
absolutely
amazing. I say, if you're going to get sick, you might as well be in Boston. But even with that, when you Google young breast cancer survivors or young breast cancer support groups, I found it incredibly challenging to find that community. I was expecting people to crawl out of Facebook, crawl out of social media and say, let's grab a coffee. This is pre-COVID, but like, let's grab a coffee, let's chat, let me tell you all about it. And that's not what I met. I was met with great resources, but they were women who were either much older than me, they've already had children, they were not dealing with fertility issues, et cetera. And so based on my own experience, I was really just looking at what the gaps are in the medical and health field, and really wanted to partner with physicians and oncologists and doctors and community leaders to say, okay, here's a gap and here's a need. Let's partner and work together to fill that, which is how I started the nonprofit SurvivingBreastCancer.org.
That's wonderful. And it seems like the response has been overwhelming.
Yes, we are. I think we're in like our toddler ages right now. We're about 3 years old as an organization, but our vision and goal is, you know, we're rocking it, we're crushing it. And we're feeling that need in terms of providing education. We're a content platform. So just education through weekly blogs, weekly podcasts. We do weekly support groups over Zoom. So we can really have a large audience, not just in Boston, but across the United States and expanding to Canada and the Northern Hemisphere.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's coming along. And we also want to be a voice for others. So we are also attracting other women to share their stories, because we all experience health and diet and, you know, diagnoses, whether it is just breast cancer or diabetes or weight gain or anything. Someone has a different story. And so it might not be my story, but we really want to provide this community with, okay, that's not exactly what happened to me, but let me share my experience, because someone else may be able to glean that information and find it very useful.
Yeah, it sounds like you really have a diverse array of people who can share their story, because not everybody's story is the same. That's true with my clients too. It's very, you know, different for different people. So that's really wonderful. That's really wonderful. You know, people might be wondering sort of why I'm having you on, which, you know, this is totally fun and you're awesome. But other than that, you know, because a lot of people think, well, I'm, you know, look into what Andy does so I don't get sick. But people have this maybe misconception about breast cancer and your health, and also how to manage it.
Yes.
You know, with making these important health decisions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for asking. That's such a great question. And, you know, this is not meant to scare anybody. Everyone who's listening to your show and is trying to better themselves are definitely on the right track. So, you know, this is kind of framed in the cancer world. We don't know 100% what causes cancer. This could happen to anybody, which is part of that awareness piece. So one of the reasons why I'm so glad to be on your show and have connected with you is because I became a vegetarian at the age of 16. And, you know, I think it was one of those moments of like, okay, I got my driver's license. I'm in high school. I need a cause. Like, I'm just going to be a vegetarian. Like, it was just something, but it stuck. And over time, that passion for health and wellness and eating and nutrition and vegetarianism morphed into becoming a vegan. So I got rid of the eggs, I got rid of the dairy, and I was eating kale and broccoli and quinoa like it was my business. Like, this was my job. And I think if you met any of my friends, they would see me as that health and wellness person. I loved exercising and was probably at the healthiest prime of my life in my young 30s. And I was shocked to find out that the health nut me, got breast cancer. I was like in disbelief. So I think this kind of brings into light, so what are some of the symptoms and causes and correlations that I've found along that path? So, you know, first I want to say, and it's so hard right now because I'm going through the survivorship moment where, yes, I'm surviving and I'm seeing a nutritionist and they're helping me with my diet. And they're telling me to cut out the red meats and cut out this and cut out that. And I'm like, dude, like I have been like this, that's not the problem. But what I have been told was that because of my healthy diet and lifestyle, it offset my diagnosis. I could have been diagnosed much younger had I had, you know, a poor diet, right? So I was able to live very healthy up until 34 with my diagnosis. And because I was so healthy, I was able to respond to the treatments very well. I had extra energy when I needed it. I mean, don't get me wrong, they were hard and gruesome.
Yeah.
But over the scheme of things, I was in a very good starting place to kind of conquer the therapies.
That is a really important point. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because people might tend to think, well, there's no hope, so I might as well just, you know, let it all go. And you really, it may have played into how well you're doing right now and during the treatment. Oh, that's a really good point.
Yes. I heard another woman in our community. She was so excited. She lost 100 pounds. She was thrilled that she lost all of this weight. And she's new to our community because she recently got diagnosed. And she was like, I finally have this new body. I'm so excited. And now I have to have breast surgery. And we reframed it as saying, but what if you didn't lose all that weight? You might not have found the lump. You might not have felt the lump because of all the extra fat and tissue around. So in a way, it's very life-saving. So, you know, just to stay on the positive side and realize that we are working towards health regardless of that diagnosis.
Yeah, it's so important. And that's a really interesting story too, because it's probably very easy to get discouraged when you do get that diagnosis. I know that, you know, other than this myth that oh, if you're healthy, quote unquote healthy, you're not going to get cancer. Are there other myths that people hold on to, you know?
No, great question. Absolutely. So, you know, I think that's great too. Like you hear all the time, I'm healthy, it can't happen to me.
Right.
Breast cancer doesn't run in my family, so therefore I can't get it. I think that's probably the largest one. About 10% of all breast cancer diagnoses are correlated to a genetic gene mutation. And so they are hereditary, being passed down from family through our genes. But that's only 10%. So I'll talk a little bit about that, but that also leaves approximately 90% to other factors. So this is what I was saying, like, we don't know. It could be all of these environmental factors. And I'm not going to blame the shampoo or the makeup or, you know, the pollution in the air, et cetera, but it's probably the combination of everything. Time and time again on these repeated behaviors, that whether it's environmental, where I'm living, gas lines, et cetera, like, we don't know. And I definitely went through the anger phase. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like, as the vegan, I was upset.
Yeah.
My boyfriend was like, we are going out for steak. Like, this is ridiculous. No, but I think it was all in that coping. And now it's just like, you know, I want to live a long and full life. And it's even now more important to me to really take care of myself. So the family piece, I think, is really important, that, yes, you might not have a family member who has had breast cancer before, but then when you think about it, do you only have uncles on one side? There might not be a lot of women in your family for them to have a diagnosis.
That
right?
is a really good point. They didn't, or maybe the women had died of other causes and never got to the point. It's so true.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of things. One of the things that we always recommend is just have that conversation about family and medical history. I come from a family where it was very close to the vest. It was very uncommon to talk about ailments. You know, you would hear about aunts and uncles and they're not doing well, but you never knew the details. So-and-so is fine, or they're getting better, but you never really had the details. And it wasn't until my own diagnosis that the woodwork of all of these ailments came out. And thank goodness, because now we have this repository that I can pass on to my siblings and my nieces and just say, like, here's the family history. And if your doctors know about this in advance, you might be eligible to be getting screened for various, whether it's breast cancer, colonoscopies, you know, vision, throat cancers, like anything. If they have the information of what's going on with your family, they can better tailor your medicine and your healthcare.
Now, it's so important and important to have these conversations with your doctor too. You think, oh, I'm 35, you know, I don't have to worry about it, but you know, and hopefully your doctor is having that conversation with you. I know that when I was younger, my doctor was always like, most cancers are found by self-exam and not by mammogram, you know, and so that's really important. And another thing is that not all families share that information. That's so, you're so right. Wow.
Yeah. And the self-exams too are really important. You know, mammograms are only as good as your tissue. If you have really dense tissue, the mammogram, it might not pick up on everything.
Right.
So I always recommend, and again, there is some controversy around self-exams. If you ask me, I'm all for it. So that's the angle you're going to get. You know, I know some people are, I wouldn't say like against them, but you can work yourself up into a tizzy of, oh my gosh, I have something, I found something, and get a lot of false positives. So I'll just put that disclaimer out there. But I recommend just being familiar with your body, right? Like, I think as women, we have the superpower of intuition and knowing what feels good, what does not feel good, what feels normal during your menstrual cycle, what doesn't feel normal. And for me, when I found my own lump, it was, oh, it's always been there. For me, it wasn't abnormal. I just always noticed it. And I didn't know it was a thing until I was exposed to it, right? And so some other symptoms in addition to a lump could be dimpling. So think of like an orange peel where it kind of has that like rough texture around it. You'll kind of notice your skin pulling in Another symptom could be some excretion coming from your nipple and discharge. So that could also be something that would be a warning sign. And to any mothers out there who are breastfeeding, I know that this can be very popular because your body's going through so many changes after pregnancy. But to keep pushing the envelope, if you think something is not normal for you, yes, you're going to hear it could be a milk duct, it could be because you're breastfeeding. And that's very true. But I would just say keep getting second and third opinions and until you're satisfied with what the answer is.
Do you think managed care plays into this? Is that a problem, or do you feel like some people aren't getting the care that they need? Because you think about it, like you mentioned before, that you don't get your first mammogram until you're 40. Mm-hmm. And which I always thought was strange because really you need a baseline, you know,
exactly.
But that's what insurance will pay for. And they pay for once a year, and maybe you need it more than once a year. So do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, that's a really tough question. Of course, I think we should be getting this all the time because, you know, I could have been caught at a much earlier stage than I am. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I like to think that there's, I'll use the colonoscopy as an example because I haven't had that and I don't have any issues with that.
Oh, it's fun. It's so much fun. Let me tell you.
Right. You know, but I think in terms of if we look at the entire population, just because a segment of the population has a particular disease or ailment, does that mean we go out and test everybody? So, you know, I think you can argue either way. What I am not in favor of is them raising the age in which people start getting breast exams. So if it goes from 40 to 45 and that now becomes the new baseline, that is a problem.
Yeah.
I know in places like Canada, for example, they're petitioning and they're getting it raised to 50. And I'm like, how can that be possible?
No.
In the US, I believe the statistic is about 11% of people are diagnosed under the age of 40. So,
which is a lot of people.
Exactly. And these are women who are, you know, in childbirthing ages, they're starting relationships, young families, starting their career, and they have very different needs than someone who's 65 and already postmenopause.
Do you have advice to people specifically who are under 40 and have either had this diagnosis or how to catch it early, you know, or what kinds of treatment options are available to you that maybe not available, or vice versa, maybe not available mm-hmm. to folks who are over 40 who get this diagnosis?
Great question. You know, for the younger women out there, I would just say you're not alone going through this. I think that is the biggest piece of advice, that it can feel incredibly isolating. You know, you can go down that rabbit hole of why me, or take their approach of this is just a different trajectory that has given me very new experiences. I like to think of it as, you know, the worst reason to become best friends with some of the amazing people in the world, right? I have met so many amazing women, breast cancer advocates, doctors, medical professionals, scientists, because of my diagnosis, that otherwise as a liberal arts major loving my other career in education, I would not have otherwise met. So I try and find the silver lining. And one of the things that I try and do with survivingbreastcancer.org is to provide an outlet for people at whatever stage of grief that they're feeling. You know, you can come to my website and read the blogs, and I don't know who you are. I just see an IP address and I know you visited. You can come to our podcast and you can listen, and I have no idea who you are, but I see that you downloaded something, but you're getting the audio experience. Or you can come to a virtual support group where I will see you on Zoom and we can connect and we can talk. And so, you know, I think as people are going through and processing their own information, you know, it's, people are at different phases, and I think that's completely acceptable and okay, but there's a community out there for you when you're ready for it, and not to try and do it alone.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. And I can imagine, well, your own experience, right? How lonely that felt because there was no support out there. You know, and now there is.
Exactly.
And so I want to tell my listeners, you should definitely, definitely check out Laura's website, survivingbreastcancer.org. And that's one word, Surviving Breast Cancer.
Yep.
And I also encourage you to listen to her podcast because it is so great. And she's obviously, as you can tell, she is absolutely phenomenal. So if people want to go there, they can just if they want to join the support group, is it people at all levels, or do you have groups for certain stages? Or
no, great question. So it is open to everybody, including caregivers, because they need some support as well. So it's really open to absolutely everybody. We call it our Thursday Night Thrivers Meetup, and there's no agenda. We just kind of come and hang out. Sometimes we talk about breast cancer. Sometimes we talk about like the other crazy things happening in life, like homeschooling.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that.
And then on Sundays, actually, we have an every other Sunday series specifically for metastatic breast cancer.
Oh, very good. Very good. Yes, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. So I just want to say it again. It's survivingbreastcancer.org. I highly recommend that you go check it out. It is wonderful. What a wonderful thing you've done. And you're helping people all over the country and all over the world, really, because this is not just happening in the U.S., right?
Correct.
It's happening. Exactly. It's happening everywhere, all over.
And I think that's very interesting too, to like share and piggyback on like your content with like nutrition. You know,
absolutely.
I've had people come up to me. It's kind of like what not to say to someone who has cancer is you eat too much soy, right? Like the whole soy myth about being a vegan, or like, you know, people want to assume like, okay, well, if I don't do what she did, I can't get it. And, you know, I think food as medicine just plays a huge role. It helps your well-being. It helps your state of mind. It helps you fight disease. And so, yes, anyone can get cancer, but we're still all doing the right thing when we take care of our health.
I like to say nourishing your body. So you can think of nourishing your body to maximize its health potential, but you can also nourish your body when you're ill, right? There's a certain level of nourishment that you need when you're ill and you're repairing and you're recovering and you're healing. So it's important at all stages. Well, I just want to thank you so much, Laura, for coming on our Quick Bites podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
this
is a lot of fun. Oh, it's so much fun. And hopefully we can do it again sometime. I just think it's so important for everyone, and women and men, to hear this, be they survivors themselves or caregivers. I think it's really important. Pretty much everyone knows somebody or loves somebody who has had cancer or currently has cancer, me included. So thank you so much for the good work you do. I hope we can talk again sometime in the near future.
Yes, 100%. I really appreciate this. And I'll have to pick your brain too on the diet and nutrition and behavioral sides that can help our breast cancer community. So I appreciate that, Andy.
It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot. I hope you enjoyed this podcast with my special guest, Laura Carfang from survivingbreastcancer.org. Please visit my webpage at mindoverfood.com if you'd like to listen to more of these Quick Bite podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Mind Over Food or are interested in one of my free 15-minute consultations, please visit my website or email me at andy@mindoverfood.com. You can also contact me on Facebook at facebook.com/mindoverfoodtraining. And I'm also on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening to Quick Bites by Mind Over Food. I'm Andy Friedman. Keep an ear out for more Quick Bites coming soon.